Presumptive candidates once again reacting to terror following an attack in France that left at least 84 people dead. Also, a major announcement from the Trump camp as a VP pick is named. All of this happening just days ahead of the RNC convention in Cleveland. From America's election headquarters, I'm Dana Perino, and joined, as always, by Chris Steyerwald, who is actually in Cleveland, site of the convention.
In Cleveland.
So if you hear that background noise, that's like Chris trying to sound really authentic, like he's really in Cleveland.
Right, exactly. That's the patented Cleveland forklift.
How is the weather in Cleveland?
It's lovely. It's gorgeous. Well, I was just outside looking at pigs and goats that they have at the convention center as part of a sustainable farming movement. And I was there, and I felt quite right at home. It was I felt like I was where I ought to be.
Like in West Virginia?
Yeah.
Home? Okay. I'm buying that. Well, we got a lot to get to. And
right.
I actually think we should spend a moment just quickly, because it comes to our attention that there are people that actually might be listening to this.
Unlikely.
Well, no, okay. But seriously, it was like the number two podcast for all of politics last weekend. So I'm not competitive or anything, but I like it.
You're not competitive or anything, but you will drink the blood of number one next week. I see.
I'm after them. All right. We have to talk about the news of the day, which sadly is the terror attack in France. Although I guess there are some people saying, well, maybe it really wasn't terror, maybe et cetera, et cetera. This was very deadly. And I thought Mark Thiessen on the Kelly File last night on Megyn Kelly's show, when he read aloud the article from Inspire magazine that basically details and gives instructions on how to do an attack like this to readers of that magazine, which are, I would imagine, they're all radical Islamists or intelligence officials trying to figure out what radical Islamists are going to do.
Right.
This is another terrible event.
Right. And I think the word is quotidian. It has become painfully common. You wonder about our capacity for shock and outrage. This is something I thought about this after Orlando, too, which is events heretofore inconceivable. You cannot imagine. How would the political world react to it? What would it be? And we have become disturbingly good at processing and coping and dealing with the fact that this is part of life in the world as we know it in the West today, is that these kinds of attacks happen.
And so, obviously, there's plenty of news coverage and podcasts that will talk all about the terror attack. And so let's focus on what you and I do best, which is talk about the politics of it, which I don't mean to sound gross. I just mean to get down to what we are good at rather than pretending we know other things. So last night I was watching the O'Reilly Factor, and Donald Trump had called in to he had been on the Greta show, and then he called into the O'Reilly show to comment about on the terror attacks. And then later in the show, so did somebody you don't hear very often on Fox News Channel, and that was Hillary Clinton called in as well. What did you make of that?
That was a big deal. And I think the nature of the big deal is that Hillary Clinton wants Donald Trump's voters, or she wants Republican voters. She wants, we know who watches the Fox News Channel, and we have a lot of Republicans, but we have the lion's share of independents. When it comes to where independents are watching, we know so many of them are watching Fox. So for her, she is transitioning out of a primary and into a general. And the language she used some Trump buzzwords. We got to be tough. We got to be smart. We're at war.
She also used several buzzwords that O'Reilly used, because he was talking about ground troops.
Yeah.
But only NATO troops. Okay. And Charles Krauthammer challenged him on that earlier on in his show. But then when Hillary Clinton was talking about what she would suggest, I thought, oh, this is interesting. This is what O'Reilly was just saying he should be done.
Well, right. And she sounded a little Bushian. We are at war. We have to understand that we're at war. I was waiting for global war on terror to pass from her lips. So I think this is reflective of Hillary Clinton's worst attribute in the Democratic primaries in many ways was her hawkishness and the fact that she favors robust military and U.S. military intervention and action. That's something that the Democratic base does not like. But as is often the case, the thing that is a detriment in your primary campaign becomes a great asset in the general election. If you can get through intact, and now she can talk about things and people go, oh, yeah, that's right. She did vote to invade Iraq. Oh, yeah, that's right. She was in favor of interventions in Libya and Syria. And she did chastise the president, albeit mildly. She did chastise the president for fecklessness in Syria. And we are reminded of that person, and you will see her, especially after she has the nomination in hand and is benedicted by the president, you will see that that person emerge more and more.
In fact, in her book, okay, there's the Benghazi piece, and we're going to talk about the convention. There's going to be a whole day at the RNC convention focused on Benghazi and Hillary Clinton's actions or inaction. Okay, so, but let me talk about quickly about this one, because in her book, she said that she disagreed with President Obama in terms of the red line in Syria and and giving a deadline to leave Iraq. She thought it was premature. And then you had Gates, Secretary Bob Gates, Secretary Leon Panetta, and Secretary Chuck Hagel all resign.
Yep.
From the Department of Defense for the very same thing, because they couldn't stomach what was going on, that their advice wasn't taken. They thought it was the bad thing. And now are we reaping the results of that?
Well, and that would certainly be the argument from interventionists that say, if you let this go fallow, if you do not intervene, you will have a humanitarian crisis to begin with refugees. But then beyond that, you're going to have a metastatization of Islamist terrorism, and Europe's right there. And so the refugees, the migrants, these folks, this is remaking world history and world politics right now. And it's no small thing. The Brexit was just part of what could be the breakup of the EU. We are now seeing people in Germany and elsewhere, and it's having a substantial effect on American politics in this electoral cycle. The idea of, put it this way, it is a very effective attack on Hillary Clinton when Donald Trump and his supporters talk about her wanting to allow more migrants from Syria and that region into the United States. That is that hurts.
But then, okay, so then last week here in our country, we had the sniper attacks against police officers in Dallas, the ambush.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Donald Trump did this week is to turn that around and say, I'm the law and order candidate. Do you think that's a good message for him?
You're not supposed to actually say the words. Somebody else is supposed to say them about you, but Trump is
not
one
for... Well, that's not going to happen this time around.
Right. Trump is not one for subtlety, but he is clear in his branding. He is clear in his messaging. No one can mistake what he means, and what he means is he's for the cops, not the robbers. He's for the good guys, not the bad guys, and he wants to be on the side of law and order. Now, Hillary Clinton has a difficult spot here because, remember, it was her husband who put forward, who enacted the tough sentencing laws that were credited with, by the way, at the time, cleaning up murder-ridden American cities that were...
Yeah, she's already disavowed that.
And exactly. So her past says that she was part of an administration that was famous for being a tough-on-crime Democrats. And now, through the primary season and looking for the blessing of Barack Obama, has been focused on Black Lives Matter and the legitimacy of all of this. So she's got a tricky thread to pull out here, because she can't let Trump be the law and order candidate, because you know what people like more than chaos? Law and order. It turns out it's much preferable.
I like law and order.
Yeah. Who's
against
that?
I like the show too.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be petty, but I do like that show. That's a very popular show. Did you know that?
What? I've heard.
Law and Order.
I've only seen about 750 episodes, and I like the ones with Jerry Orbach the best, but that's just...
Well, okay, you're a bigger fan than I am.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, I'm not kidding. No, I don't know anything. I don't know who's in it.
Because Jerry Orbach always did the thing that after they find the body, he walks up on the body, and he always has one joke. He always has one line, and he says, guess it was only a one-night stand, or something like that. He's drinking the little crappy cup of coffee right there, and then the younger partner looks at him and rolls his eyes. That's a thing.
Oh, it's like this podcast.
Yes, exactly. Quite right.
I got it. I guess we'll go to the other news, and that is that after a very tortuous news cycle or two, Donald Trump finally settles on a vice presidential choice. He was going to have a big announcement today. He postponed that out of deference to the victims in the Nice, France attacks. But we have a winner.
Hot dog. We have a wiener.
And who is it?
It is Mike Pence. It is the governor of Indiana. So it's hard.
You're so lukewarm on it.
Oh, I think Pence is not a good choice. I do not think that was the right choice.
But
for Donald
one
Trump.
Point, you did think he was a good possible presidential candidate.
I thought that I thought he was one to be reckoned with. I thought he was one to take seriously because he could put together the old Bush coalition, values voters and sort of Chamber of Commerce, big business Republicans, two legs of the Republican stool. And if you got two out of three, you can be the nominee. Pence was really well thought of by religious and social conservatives and was much liked by people like, you know, the folks at AEI or the Chamber of Commerce or those folks. So he had a prodigious fundraising capacity and had left the House and was serving in as governor of a state. So everything, the boxes were all checked. Then as he was vacillating back and forth about running, he botched thoroughly from pen to post the handling of a religious liberty law in Indiana in which he managed to offend both sides thoroughly. And it wasn't one of those things where I've stood my ground and as a result, nobody's happy, but I've done the right thing. This is seeking to curry favor, I managed to offend all people.
Everybody.
And he leaves Indiana, he leaves political life in Indiana not on a high note.
Now, he had a deadline. One of the reasons that Donald Trump had to move this announcement forward is that Mike Pence had a deadline. He had to decide if he was going to run for governor or not by, I guess, noon.
If he did not take his name off the ballot by noon today, then the Republicans they would have had no candidate. They would have had a name on the ballot.
And you don't want to be that guy.
No, you don't want to be that guy. So I think, in part, I think Donald Trump got railroaded here.
I do, too. Let's talk about that. Why do you say that?
Because Mike Pence is not anybody, is definitely not a Donald Trump kind of guy. This is the kind of guy you take to balance out the ticket. This is the kind of guy that you take. This is like
it's an arranged marriage.
Right. It's Mitt Romney takes Paul Ryan. You say, okay.
Oh, wait, no, I thought that was a good match.
No, well, but it was a different kind of match, but I think that they were attitudinally similar, but it's the same idea.
I'm
a moderate Northeastern businessman mistrusted by the Republican base.
So I need a young
Midwestern
from the Midwest.
Conservative,
okay.
Blah, blah, blah. The standard, very conventional ticket balancing effort. Or if I'm the young governor of Texas and people aren't sure about my foreign policy bona fides, I'm going to take the grizzled and sagacious former Secretary of Defense as my Sherpa. So that's a typical move to balance out your ticket. But in Trump's case, I think what happened was, and this is conjecture on my part, that his heart belonged to Newton Leroy Gingrich, and he liked the idea of a double, as Gingrich called it, a two-pirate ticket, two political pirates swashbuckling their way through the world, the two of them. And I think he liked that idea. But instead, I believe he was made to take Pence.
I think that he wanted Christie. I know you make
really?
Fun of me. No, I do. I really do. But regardless, okay, so it's Pence. But here you have today, Dana Bash of CNN has a scoop. And she says that up until midnight of Thursday night, the night before the announcement, Trump was asking his aides, can I get out of this? And they told him no. And the spokespeople at the Trump campaign said, absolutely false. That is not true. But then NBC News just reported it as well. So something happened. And you can't have the spokespeople saying absolutely not true. I mean, maybe the spokesperson doesn't know, but you can't say that. The mistrust with the media is going to just...
Could it get worse?
Do you think
it could? I don't know that it could get worse. Maybe it can. Maybe I will come to rue those words. But I the externals on this, just taking the data that is available, leaving aside any hush-hush or gossipy reporting, is pretty not very good. Pence, the leak that confirmed Pence as the pick came in the Indianapolis Star. Now, who's better wired at the Indianapolis Star, do you think? Mike Pence or Donald Trump? So it's pretty easy to conclude, and maybe that's not the case, but it's pretty easy to conclude that it was Mike Pence and his people that were trying to buffalo Trump to push him into the point where, as it would later be said, well, you can't switch now because it'll look erratic. If you switch now, it'll look no good and they'll come after you. So it's too late. You have to take him. And that's a thing that people do. One of the reasons people leak is so that they can tie down the other part of a bargain, so that the other person isn't free to move. And in addition to that, we have Manafort, Paul Manafort, the campaign, whatever, double
manager.
Chairman,
mm-hmm.
That he said this morning on CNN that Trump had a very emotional response, I think emotional response, but he felt very deeply and differently after he saw the attack in France. And I would not be at all surprised that Trump would not be at all surprised to find out that given how the Pence people either screwed it up or tried to screw with Trump.
Oof.
And there being a big foreign policy thing relating to Islamist terrorism, which is Newt Gingrich's speciality, that Trump wouldn't have had some wedding night jitters.
Man, there's so much intrigue there. So interesting. But we have so much to get to, so I'm going to just ask you one more question on this.
Yeah.
Do you agree with me? Huh. That's probably not a fair setup.
No, sure. I mean, I'll do a blanket. I'll give you like five. You can have five. I'll agree with you on any five things that you want.
Okay. Do you agree with me that Newt Gingrich would not accept a position as the White House Chief of Staff?
I don't. Why not?
I think it would be a disaster. Speaker of the House. And Chief of Staff, you get there at 4 in the morning. You work till 10 at night. You have to deal with all the crap. You're not out there doing.
He did not leave as Speaker of the House as exactly Nicholas Longworth, okay? He has some makeup to do. And I think if Newt Gingrich thought that as White House Chief of Staff, I don't think that would be the position for him. I think he'd be a bad fit for that. I think he's not young enough. I think that he is too bullheaded. And I think that he wants an agenda of his own. But I think that he might take it just on the grounds of he wants to leave his mark. He did not get, I'm sure in his eyes, he would tell you that welfare reform, that balanced budgets, that those were his real successes. But history remembers him as a guy who impeached but failed to convict Bill Clinton and then left in a cloud of scandal.
So does Pence get Trump any votes that he didn't already have?
No. No.
I don't think so either.
No. Well, I mean.
I mean, maybe some evangelical support.
No, I think when you saw the
response. They were already there.
The Republican establishment gave him a golf clap. There was a solid golf clap delivered to Trump for taking Pence. The Marco Rubio, Joni Ernst, all these. I think that the pick of Pence, which was different than the Pirates of Penzance, but the pick of Pence was for placating, mollifying the Republican establishment and the donor class to say, look, we understand we need $500 million. We understand that we need operational strength and support. We understand we need your help. What do we have to do? And Mike Pence, being sort of the apotheosis of all of that, says, yeah, you take him and that'll be a good faith effort. So I think this was Trump's effort at making a good faith effort, and I bet he hates it.
Any danger? Of course there's danger. That Trump and Pence get crosswise with each other in the next 14 weeks?
Especially if
Trump feels like he got, that this was a wedding he didn't want to have to make.
If I was Paul Manafort or whomever was responsible for being the salesperson, now if it's his kids, you know, you can't fire your kids. But if it was Manafort or somebody else inside the campaign that had pushed this Pence pick, there will be trouble between Pence and Trump. There will be problems because Trump will say something or Pence will be called to defend something Trump has said. Remember, Pence is a person who spoke out against the Muslim ban. Pence is somebody who has taken issue in the past. He's a down-the-line conservative that when Pence says, well, he's the top of the ticket, but that doesn't mean that I agree with everything he says. When those moments arise, whoever it was that was selling a pocket full of Pence will be in trouble. And I think that's when you'll see the next staff shake up in Trumpganistan.
What's that? Okay. All right. You win.
I'm just saying.
No, it's awesome. No, I mean, you win in that I feel like I couldn't top that. I do wonder, Governor Chris Christie, one, he's governor, so he's kind of busy. But he also, he's supposed to be running the transition team for Trump. God, do you think he's upset today?
I think that's
sad.
It's sad. He had to stand there.
Sad.
Remember how long he had to
eager.
stand behind Trump?
Oh, I know.
And the thing, and he looked like he had been taken hostage,
yes.
And he stood there. And
he was communicating to us with his eyes.
And then Trump made fun of him for eating Oreos, and it was, it's been, it, he, the here's the thing.
And Trump and Pence are doing their first campaign event in New Jersey.
I know. That's like the grapefruit in the face. That is like, hey, where should we do it? That would be like, we're going to have our engagement party at your ex-boyfriend's house.
Do you think that they'll ask him to introduce?
He'll officiate. I'm so glad I introduced you guys to each other. I think for Christie, the Bridgegate stuff, number one, but number two,
not surmountable.
I mean, it's insurmountable. But number two, what does this ticket? What does Donald Trump have the biggest problem with? The most significant problem that he has is that female voters. He's the pits. Like Donald Trump, Republicans are always the pits with women voters, especially unmarried women or women under 50. But this is the worst. And Chris Christie, who is tough talk, tough guy. Now, he's a sweet to his wife and he's a sweet family man and he's all of that stuff. But he doesn't that tough guy bravado stuff. I don't think is what you're looking for if you're trying to demonstrate to female voters thoughtfulness, stability. And I know I'm painting with too broad a brush here about, you know, women and men, when it comes to voting, aren't nearly as different as conventional political wisdom holds. Women and men want the same things. What's different, of course, is that younger women and I think the simplest way to think about it is, what do you do? Dads, by and large, are already Republican. Moms are Republican curious, are available potentially. Married women and women with children are potentially available in majority to the Republican Party. How do you convince them that you, as George W. Bush successfully did in 2004, by making a security argument?
Security
and,
moms.
And it worked.
Let's talk about the polls then, because there's some new polling out this week. I remember at one of these podcasts, you said that you really wouldn't pay attention to too many polls until after the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So is it safe now to ask you about the polls, and can you give us your synopsis?
Well, Trump, we don't have the volume of polling that we
It's not the Slim Jim of polling yet?
We don't have a full Slim Jim. We have like a strip of jerky.
Is there like a junior Slim Jim? Like, don't they have those little half smokes, little smokies?
Well, now wait a minute. Now, a little smoky is something entirely different.
It doesn't come in the
A little smoky
plastic.
Do you know how you make smoke flavoring, liquid smoke?
No.
You make it by smoking salt. And then dissolve in a smoker, and then dissolving that salt into a solution, and then you can add it to whatever you want.
Do you think we should try to do that on the bus that the 5 is taking to Cleveland?
When you get here, I want you to bring Gutfeld, and I'm going to take you on a tour. They have the farm here that I told you about, and we're going to try to ride a pig, and we'll just see how
Kimberly
it goes.
Kimberly and I have to do the kiss a pig contest somewhere along the way.
Where?
I'm not allowed to say.
You can't say?
No, but it's happening. Either Saturday or Sunday, I can't remember. They said, would you be willing to do the Kiss a Pig contest? And I said, well, tell me how it works. And they said, well, so there's two women or two people, whatever, and there's a contest to see who raises the most money, I guess, to kiss a pig.
I
said, well, who's the other woman? And they said, Kimberly. And I said, I'm totally in, because I guarantee I'm not winning that contest. Nobody's going to want to see me kiss a pig. They want to see Kimberly kiss a pig.
I think you're reading this wrong.
Why?
I think the person who wins the pig kissing contest is the person that the crowd most wants to embarrass, right? That's not, you don't do that for somebody because it's like, we love you, so therefore kiss this swine.
No, I think that they're going to want to, we don't take it that way. We're not taking it.
You're doing positive.
We're not approaching
this is
it
all
that
positive.
Way.
This
of course.
I like you guys are all upstairs, upper class pig kissers. pictures. You take there's no bad in pig kissing.
There's not, but the picture's going to need to be priceless.
It's going to be epic.
But so there was, what about the, so there was a Quinnipiac poll that a lot of people talked about and the Marist poll that a lot of people talked about. Can you run that down for people? Because it was a little different regarding the battleground states.
So the Q poll was in the field a little bit too long. It was in the field for like 10 days or something.
Yeah, almost 12 days, yeah.
And so it was in the field for too long, but gave us some interesting data points, talk about a close race, things have changed in Florida, bad couple weeks for Hillary, da-da-da-da-da. Then we got a slew of other swing state polling. And we got two polls in Colorado, we got Iowa, we got Wisconsin, we got Virginia, we got another poll in Pennsylvania, we have a bunch of swing state polling. And the picture is not great for Trump because, well, it does not argue for the Mike Pence choice, I'll put it that way. Because what it said, so the traditional Republican coalition, the path to 270 electoral votes for Republicans is, in the post-1988 era, is Florida and Ohio, and then you got to get, and of course Virginia is baked into that cake, and he's way behind in Virginia. Then you got to get to Colorado, then you got to get a Nevada, you got to get a West Virginia, you got to pick up some smaller states, some lower electoral vote states to try to put it together. What the polling tells me is that Pennsylvania is going to be the make or break moment for Donald Trump. If he can play in Pennsylvania, if he can really compete in Pennsylvania.
Isn't that always like, though, the one that got away for Republicans?
The chiasma.
I remember this. Yeah,
yes.
For as long as I've been paying attention, I don't think Republicans have won Pennsylvania.
Well, George H.W. Bush won it in 1988. And since then.
I hadn't graduated high school yet, so I'm.
But
I'm not as learned as you.
I was tracking. I was definitely tracking, but I am a dork.
Our favorite, most lovable dork.
That's what we're going for. Trump can win in Pennsylvania if he can get crossover Democrats, especially in western Pennsylvania, especially in southwestern Pennsylvania, to come to his side. Because what always happens in Pennsylvania, the reason that minority vote intensity does not traditionally ramp up until the final weeks of an election. And so what happens is Republicans look at Pennsylvania and go, hey, it's close. George W. Bush, I believe, was in Pennsylvania in the closing week of 2004. It's close. Looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. And then in the last two or three weeks, the Philadelphia vote turns on and kaboom, and it flips the other way. It could be different for Trump. Because his appeal is to blue-collar white voters, especially older blue-collar white voters, there's a lot of those in Pennsylvania. And I reiterate, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Maine, Minnesota, Iowa. There are states out there in the northern tier that are overwhelmingly white with lots of blue-collar voters that were good states for Ross Perot. These are states that Donald Trump can do well in, and he can get crossover Democrats. He can't spend his time trying to put Virginia back together. He can't spend his time worrying about North Carolina.
But how do you get to 270 electoral votes if you don't win Colorado, North Carolina, and Virginia?
You give me Pennsylvania. If you start it now, obviously you got to have Ohio. You got to have Ohio, and you probably got to have Florida, too. But if you give me Florida, Pennsylvania, and Ohio,
well, I can. Well, obviously, I can do that.
Well, but just give me Ohio and Pennsylvania. Start me with the Rust Belt. Say Ohio and Pennsylvania. Start there, and you can build a map. And it's rickety in a couple of spots.
Boy, and she is not liked up there.
No, she's not liked up there.
Well, or anywhere.
Or really. Anywhere particularly. And he has a path, especially when he hammers on trade. But guess who likes free trade? Mike Pence. Mike Pence likes free trade. Guess who
still?
Likes free trade? I assume that there will be a new slate of positions forthcoming from Governor Pence. But this is not the brand. The brand for Trump is the disruptor for the Joe Sixpack, disruptor for the lunch pail white guys who feel like the system is working against them and is rigged against them, that you guys are getting screwed, and it's those guys in Washington and those guys on Wall Street who are screwing you over. They are colluding against your interests. They ship your jobs overseas. They screw you with taxes. They screw you with regulations. They make everything bad for you. and they get rich themselves. That's the argument that works. And there are plenty of those voters, but a lot of them are Democrats, a lot of them are independents, and a lot of them don't vote.
Okay, so in these polls, it looked like Hillary had, as you said, had bad weeks. So the way I describe it is she cratered, but he has yet to gain. But he
right.
could gain.
He got
so
a little,
the convention could be really good for him or not.
He had.
It may be fine, right? It can't
so
be
far,
bad.
So far, it's shaping up to be what I'm sure is a great relief and delight to Republicans, which is boring. It's shaping
exactly.
up to be.
Like I know. Not going to live up to the hype.
Right. Thank God they say this is going to be a snoozer.
And yeah, because Manafort put the hammer down on the Never Trumpers last night.
I don't think he should.
And then he rubbed their noses in it.
And Trump bragged about it, too.
I hate that.
People whose votes you need.
I don't like that when that happens to anybody. Like, I don't want anyone making fun of Chris Christie.
The never.
You know what I mean?
A little. The Never Trump people. Botched. It was a comedy of error. You know, we're going to do all this stuff. And then they got there, and it turns out that the people who were supporting Ted Cruz were more interested in preserving 2020 and their chances in 2020 than they were in standing athwart Donald Trump's nomination.
Like, I never thought that Never Trump people were going to be successful, but the
they
way
really
in which they just absolutely rubbed their noses in it was like, wow, do you want, I mean, they were Never Trump for the nominee, and now they might be Never Trump for never voting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think. Look, I think Donald Trump, and this is why I talk about why he needs these Democratic voters, why
yeah,
he
so
needs
can
that
he capture
coalition.
The ones that Hillary's losing?
Yeah.
And what do they look like? Are they younger?
Older.
Women? Older. Okay.
Dudes.
Older men.
Dudes.
Okay.
Yes.
That would normally vote Democrat, but are like.
Or not vote.
Okay.
And
she would need massive turnout on her side in order to overcome this, right?
Look, I believe if the election were held today, she would win pretty handily. But there's 3.5 months yet to go. And if Trump is disciplined about who he wants, you got to decide when you're running for office, whose votes do you want? And then you have to name them and claim them. When George W. Bush was running for re-election, particularly, those security moms, they knew he was courting them. They knew that's what he was doing. When Barack Barack Obama...
He asked for their vote.
Exactly. And when Barack Obama was running, he talked to younger voters, and he also talked to college-educated suburbanites and said, I understand you don't like everything that I've done, but I'm going to tell you that what we've done has been okay. And he also did fantastic work in convincing unmarried women, young women, college educated, of all races, that Mitt Romney is a creep who will take you back in the past. He doesn't respect women. I respect women. I'm a chance for the future. If Donald Trump doesn't decide who are his voters, who is he really talking to, and then stick with it, they're going to tune him out. But he really, really can convince these guys. Donald Trump can win New Hampshire.
I think so.
Maine. He can win Minnesota. He can win Iowa. The polling in Iowa demonstrates him ahead or tied. He can win Iowa. These are states that
is
the
that
Republican...
Is that why Hillary Clinton is thinking about Vilsack for the Secretary of Agriculture for possible vice president?
What a loaf of soybeans. Can you imagine? Tom Vilsack?
Now, let's think about, though. Loaf of soybeans would be like...
Tofu.
Right. I mean, a lot of people like it.
I guess.
I don't like it.
Those pigs I was just visiting down there probably approved.
You know what? I thought this was interesting. So it's always interesting to see what the other party is going to do during what the Democrats will do during the RNC convention and vice versa.
Right.
So Hillary Clinton, on the first night of the Republican convention, on Monday night, July 18th, she's going to speak at the NAACP meeting. And one of the polls this week showed that Donald Trump polling with 0% from African Americans in Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Now, there's probably some support. That zero support is probably not
right.
Totally
there's
accurate.
A guy. There's
people,
somebody.
Right.
Right.
How much of a concern should that be to the Trump people? Because you can't just win with white voters.
Let me contradict myself a little bit. and say, while it is important that your target voters know that you are ardently in pursuit of them, it is also important that you demonstrate a willingness to go and bring the conversation to others. And I think, quite frankly, that Donald Trump made a mistake by refusing the invitation to speak to the NAACP.
But don't you think they would have booed him? And
like, of course.
But Governor Kasich, the governor of Ohio, is not speaking at the RNC convention. He was a presidential candidate, and he's speaking at the NAACP next week.
Of course they would have booed Trump. Of course they would have booed Trump. But you go anyway.
And then you say they booed me.
Well, you let them boo you. You let them get it out of you. Let us quote America's greatest president. And they, who said, they tell me I should destroy my enemies. But if I make my enemy into a friend, have I not destroyed my enemy?
Oh, that's very good. Now,
Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
The dude, man. It was tough to make the republic. It was tougher to keep it.
Right. Right.
Harumph.
So, but then if his African-American support is that low, say, in North Carolina and Virginia,
right,
where the electorate, what is that, is about 20 to 24% of the electorate, as I understand from our good friend Ed Gillespie.
Correct.
Then you have to do better there with African-Americans, right? Or no?
I don't know that he can.
Okay.
I just,
it's like too far gone. Like,
Not only is it too far gone, but when you have a guy who was the leading birther, when you have a guy who has said every insulting thing about Barack Obama, who tried to basically unperson Barack Obama.
Yeah.
When you have that guy running to succeed Barack Obama, it's not hard for the president to say to those voters, don't let them do this. Don't let them do this to me. And the visceral response to after centuries of inequality, after centuries of second-class citizenship, after all of that, to then replace Barack Obama with Donald Trump would not be very attractive to those voters. And it doesn't take much for the president to key in on that.
Let me just tell you something. This is just news that I just saw come across before we go to trivia.
Uh-oh.
Jonathan Martin of the New York Times is reporting that Donald Trump did not call Newt to tell him he had gone with Pence. A few minutes after the tweet, Newt still hadn't gotten called.
Oh.
Wah-wah.
Oh. Wow.
I know.
Oh.
I feel bad for everybody.
Newt.
Poor Newt. All right. Well, that's interesting. Can I ask you something? Before you left the house.
Yeah.
And you're going to be gone for 2 weeks.
Right.
What did you say to Arthur and Newman?
Well, you know, I am very blessed that I have kids who understand politics a lot for their age, and they're very interested in what's going on. But they were mostly interested in making sure that they got good souvenirs from the road. So bribery definitely works with children.
Are they going to miss you? Are
I don't
they
going
to get to go do something fun?
Right. I'm overrated, so I think they'll be just fine.
Aw. Are you ready for some trivia?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I think last time you said I had to step it up and make it harder. Okay.
Oh, did I say that? I don't remember saying that.
Yes, you did, because I said I asked you which president had signed into law the day of holiday for Martin Luther King.
Bonewald's
Jr.
sitting across from me over here in Cleveland.
He looks like
he's one of those pigs rolling around in the mud down there.
I have an additional one that is going to be difficult for you. It's not written down, so I'm formulating it in my mind. So I'm going to go with Bonewald's first.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready.
All right. 7 U.S. presidents were born in Ohio.
Right.
Who was the first?
First president born in Ohio was William. No, it was Benjamin Harrison.
No.
No?
Mm-mm. Who Nothing. Is considered to have written the best presidential
oh,
memoir
Grant.
Ever?
Oh, derp. Derp. Derp.
What does
what
derp mean?
Derp means like duh. Yeah. Derp.
Okay. Of the 7
yes.
presidents born in Ohio, how right. many survived their presidencies? Of the 7, how many?
Okay.
You just need a number. I'm not going to ask you the names unless you have them.
Garfield, dead. McKinley, dead. Harding, dead.
Right.
So, let's see. Grant lived. Benjamin Harrison lived. Chester A. Arthur. Whoa, 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 whoa. Did Chester A. Arthur die?
Was he born in Ohio?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Oh, okay. Oh, he wasn't?
He's not on my list.
Now you're messing with my head.
He's not on this list. It's four.
It's four. Okay.
Four. Benjamin Which Harrison, four? U.S. Right. Grant, Rutherford B. Hayes, and William Howard Taft. The three that died, William McKinley, Warren okay. Harding, and James Garfield.
And Warren, I always like to refer to him as Gamma Meal.
Why?
Because that's his middle name, Warren Gamma Meal Harding.
Where does that come from?
I don't know.
That sounds like a baby food.
I'm not a Gamma Meal.
But doesn't it sound like baby food?
I don't know what kind of baby food you've seen, but that sounds unappetizing.
All right. I have one more that I haven't formulated, but I think this will be a good one.
Okay.
Okay. This vice president was away from Washington, D.C. on a business trip when his dog died.
Okay.
The dog's name was Justice, and it may be the only dog buried, one of the only vice president's dogs, buried at the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C.
So this vice president mm-hmm. was in office
yes.
and out of town on official business.
Yes.
And his dog, mm-hmm. whose name was Justice,
yes.
is buried on the grounds of the Naval
Observatory.
Yeah,
he died while he was away on the trip. The dog died.
A dog named Justice, mm-hmm. which sounds like the children's book that you will eventually write. Man, and I hope there's an Ohio tie-in.
There is not an Ohio tie-in.
So this is just like random.
But there's a little bit of a tie-in of somebody that I recently saw.
Is it Dan Quayle?
It is.
All right.
That was a great hint that I just gave you. That Don't you think that's best. A good piece of trivia?
I think that a dog named me now having the title of something for a dog named Justice makes up for anything.
It's like the crime dog.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did you have him in West Virginia?
What are you? I did not grow up in the Yukon in the 1880s. Did you all have television in West Virginia? Have you heard about that?
People ask me that about Wyoming. Well,
I was
actually,
gonna say, you didn't exactly grow up on the Upper West Side, sister.
No, I have to tell you, I mean, we had we got three channels.
Right.
On a clear day, you could get one Denver channel. We got the two channels from Rapid City and maybe one from Casper, but they were always really snowy. Mm-hmm. And so there was like a lot of tinfoil and rabbit ears.
My brother and sisters used to make me go stand by the antenna.
Oh, yeah. He's like, just stand right there, Angie. That's what I tell my sister.
Let the radiation flow through you to help us.
I'm sure that was not a health risk.
Not at all.
Not at all. So I'm headed to Cleveland. I'm going to be on this bus. The hashtag is Road to Cleveland. We will be following the news. It looks like there's a coup in Turkey, just in case you were
just in case.
Wondering what else is happening at the moment. I'm not making light of that. This is like a lot of news to digest going into this very important convention. So I will see you there.
See you there, sister.
All right. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and be sure to leave us a review. We are like a juggernaut of podcasts and we don't even have a name, which is so awesome about this podcast. Along with Chris Steuerwald, I'm Dana Perino, and this is Fox News Radio.